This is Lee Fisher.
This is Morgan Waddell. Today is Friday, July 26th, and it is 3:20 p.m.
And we are here to talk about the LGBT aging population and their experiences, challenges, disparities, discrimination, and abuse in health and healthcare, long-term care, partner rights, and financial stability, amongst other things that we've talked about. And we also want to talk about how all of those things can lead to such a feeling of isolation and loneliness with the individuals as well as the loved ones and the community as they search for a sense of purpose.
So just to give some statistics, the Aging with Pride study out of the LGBT and National Aging Research Center, they estimated that there are 2.7 million adults ages 50 and older that identify as LGBT in the U.S., with 1.1 being 65 and older. 21% do not expose their sexuality or gender identity. Also, in a 2000 study, 82% of LGBT seniors reported having experienced abuse at least once in their life, and 64% at least three times.
That's some pretty astounding numbers if you really look at that. I mean, just to think that 82% of the seniors reported experiencing abuse at least once. Then that's incredible. And I just think about being older and being in that situation. That is that's devastating.
Right. And even thinking about who is advocating for for the ones who, you know, for all, but really, you know, also who are experiencing this abuse, you know, for it to occur three or more times. It's like, you know, who's speaking up for this vulnerable population?
Right. Yeah. And some of the research I've seen also says that it's the community that doesn't always stand up for them. So it's, you know, even in their own community, they're finding those struggles. So, and that's really, I think, part of the interesting thing about this is just the intersectionality of those who are LGBTQ and they're also seniors makes them so vulnerable, like you said, to discrimination and abuse, like in across so many sectors of their lives. So I know we talked about some of the key disparities, and then I figure we'll just kind of walk into the stuff that we've done some research on, you know, with this. But some of those key disparities are, you know, elevated risk of social isolation. We just talked about that. Income not being commensurate with education, more lifetime discrimination and victimization, and some higher rates of health disparities. Not to mention some of the financial and legal issues and the partner burdens, and we can just kind of get into that too. But I know you tackled financial and legal issues, so do you want to kind of talk about some of the things you found?
Yeah, of course, I would love to get into that. You know, Lee, I found this great article. It's called LGBT Advocate Sees Hurdle. It's written by Michael Adams back in 2011, and he goes into some of the financial insecurities. He said that LGBT older people are less financially secure than American elders as a whole. And he goes into some of those reasons being, you know, that state laws can shut down LGBT partners out of an inheritance, or they can require them to pay steep taxes on an estate that a surviving heterosexual spouse would inherit tax-free. A legal issue that I found was this case that is still going on. It's the Marshall Witzel case. She moved into a, you know, Chicago low-income senior living facility back in 2014. Her partner of 30 years died. She suffered abuse when she had disclosed to her fellow residents that her partner had been a woman. The residents then used homophobic slurs. They physically assaulted her. They even went as far as spitting on her. She reported this to the staff. The staff did nothing. So she sued the facility for failing to protect her from harassment, discrimination, and violence. So her case is still under appeal. So hopefully, Lee, we see some progression in her case.
Yeah, that's a heavy situation. I'm glad that she's bringing it to court, though. That's amazing. Hopefully, it'll work out well for her and set a precedent going forward. And I think that's a good segue too into the health disparities in this population. So, you know, some of the physical health disparities in those numbers is lesbians have a higher rate of cardiovascular disease, overweight, and poor general health. Gay and bisexual men are twice as likely to live alone and have a higher risk of cancer and HIV. And not surprising, the transgender older adults have a higher rate of discrimination, victimization, mental distress, poor health, less support. And bisexual older adults have a higher stigma. They're less likely to disclose their identity, and they tend to have lower income and less support around them. And I think that when you get into some of the mental health disparities, there's nearly 50% report depression, 55% are likely to experience psychological distress, 50% are more likely to need psychiatric medication. These numbers are really shocking to me. For LGBT older adults, over 50% were more likely than their heterosexual counterparts to have suicidal ideation. Mm. And then transgender, it's 96% more likely. So those are some pretty staggering statistics. And that mm-hmm. also leads to a limited access in aging health and support services for both mental and physical health. So why don't we move into talking about the impact on partners?
All right, Lee, going back to that, you know, Adam's article that he wrote, he just did such a great job with it too. And we're discussing policy, you know, throughout this podcast as well. And, you know, with impact to partners, I mean, there's so much, you know, in Gen Silent, we heard, you know, the man say, you know, why can't I just kill myself, you know, quote unquote, with his partner, and he's living alone and he's visiting his partner. And so, you know, we got to really bridge that gap. You know, how do we really help, you know, not only, you know, the person who, you know, is in the hospital, but also how do we help the other, you know, the caregiver? You know, how do we help them as well? So, you know, Mr. Adams touched upon that, you know, with caregiving issues, that LGBT frequently they're not granted family or medical leave to take care of a sick or terminally ill partner, which is huge. I mean, not having access to FMLA, I mean, that's just outstanding to me. I cannot believe that, you know, they're denied that, you know. You know, LGBT, they can also be excluded from decision-making on a partner's medical care and funeral plans.
Yeah.
And that to me is just, you know, an issue. It's like, you know, you've got your client over here, but you also have this caregiver who's just like, wait a minute, like, where's my part in this?
Right.
You
know, for in protection in right. that. And I know that, you know, the research shows that caregivers of LGBT individuals, just like others as well, and anybody, they report disability, depression, victimization, and verbal sexual abuse higher than their heterosexual counterparts. So, you know, that just shows there is an extra burden. We talked about that, you know, intersectionality. There's that extra burden when you can't make those decisions, right?
Right.
So, I mean, that kind of leads into, you know, we had talked about earlier about isolation and community support and how those factor in. And there are high levels of resilience in the LGBT community and their connection to families of choice, but still isolation and depression is high among LGBT seniors. You know, from we talked about from mainstream as well as their, you know, the LGBT community as a whole. And I think, you know, finding purpose and a sense of meaning in their lives in the elderly is really important. And when you're alone and in your isolation, especially in this community, just trying to connect them with advocates and resources to be able to step outside of that. You know, when you talk about 53% of the LGBT seniors have said they experience loneliness. You know, what are we going to do about that, right?
Right.
So there's a quote from the Aging and Health Report, from one of the caregivers, and it said isolation, finding friend support, caregiving, and health are the biggest issues aging gay persons face. Who will be there for us? Who will help care for us without judgment? And there again goes back to who do they trust in the healthcare community too? Mm-hmm. And they're isolated. They're fear of being identified and discriminated against. And you know, it's just something we definitely have to address. Now, we've been talking a lot about the individuals and the partners in the LGBT senior community, but, you know, we had talked earlier when we were going through the research about, you know, what is the impact from a social work perspective on society in general? You have any thoughts on?
Yeah, I mean, we really got into, you know, like the financial impact. So the financial impact to these seniors is well above cisgender couples and therefore often puts them in a lower socioeconomic position where government programs must step in to assist in order to guard their basic well-being. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, you tie that in with healthcare, mental health, and long-term housing, you know, as issues that the elder community is experiencing. It is. They mentioned it in the documentary. It's at an epidemic level. And one of our guest speakers even had brought up, you know, that aging in itself is at that level. And it's only going to get greater as the population across the board ages, right? I mean, us and whatever you want to say group is, we're all getting older as a culture, as a society.
Baby boomers.
Exactly. And I question, you know, our systems, are they going to be able to support this population? And we're going to be forced to change, you know, or we're going to have a real public health care crisis on our hands. And I think caregivers, especially older ones, have to be reeducated. They have to be retrained to work more effectively with the population. And they got to stay current with, you know, not only, aging issues, but also the changing cultural atmosphere of acceptance. And policy is going to have to catch up with that cultural shift.
Right. And you know what, Lee, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, in the video, they even said, you know, healthcare is going to have to learn how to welcome and learn how to work with the aging population, especially the LGBT, you know, aging population, which we're talking about, you know, and that in itself will force, change and, you know, what about increase in healthcare costs, you know, emergency room visits, especially given the fact that, you know, older LGBT individuals often do not see their primary care physician.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, for ongoing wellness visits due to a fear of prejudice and discrimination. Yeah. So we've got to be thinking about that too.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of room for social and policy change, right? And really, that's the next thing we're going to get into. I think we're going to take a real quick break, and then we'll get back in and get into, I'll geek out on policy, and we'll get into that. Okay, Morgan, so let's talk policy. I think we got to start with the Older Americans Act, first and foremost. One of the things in the Older Americans Act is having those protections in place with, you know, social and health services programs. But the other thing I wanted to say is there's actually a bill that was introduced to Congress this year on March 14th called the Ruthie and Connie LGBT Older Americans Act of 2019. And basically, it would open up protections and funding avenues to LGBT older adults. So that they can get services like home and community service, in-home and community services, transportation, legal services, elder abuse programs, which we know is a really big one, is including prevention and caregiver support. So, you know, that's something we can advocate for, is for bills like that to be put into law so that it includes the protection. So laws like the OOA have those protections in place for LGBT older adults.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Lee. And also, you know, diving back into, you know, I kind of talked about, you know, earlier, you know, to amend the Federal Family and Medical Leave Act, which would extend coverage beyond those related by blood or marriage, recognizing the central role of friends in providing care for LGBT older adults. I think that'll be huge.
The Federal Nursing Reform Act, which creates the standards of care for nursing home residents, California, again, SB 1279, does require cultural competency training for issues of sex, sexual identity, gender. And that's since 2009. So that's been in place. And it requires RNs, CNAs, other healthcare providers, physicians, allied health. They have to go through training. And their goal, literally, here's the quote, preventing and eliminating discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. So California is on that leading edge, so hopefully we can see other bills and new legislation come out to help this population. So, Morgan, how can we as social workers help?
You know, we could work with organizations like SAGE and also the LGBT Aging Project. We could also advocate for additional research, planning, and funding for the Department of Aging.
Sure. And I think it's important you mentioned it. Be active in conducting cultural competency trainings for staff and developing those partnerships between LGBT aging organizations, services, and the larger LGBT community, and as well as federal, state, and local providers that interact with the aging population. So what kind of interventions or treatments, you know, are out there for us as social workers to employ?
Well, we've talked about, you know, the SAGE outreach. We talked about the Aging Project. Also in the video, we saw that there was this Cafe Emmanuel place where they would have their meals. It's a get together, but also staff. It's also a weekly check-in for them where they can see how are they doing, what they may, you know, need, such as like resources and services. So I thought that was great that we got to see that in the documentary.
So addressing the social interventions, as well as the policies, the training, the psychoed for providers, as well as the communities as a whole.
Right. And there's also a resource, you know, that will go in and help train the National Resource Center on LGBT, where they will go in and train for cultural competency too. That's another intervention that's being used.
Okay. Yeah. So as far as individuals, families, and communities, what do we expect that we want to do to help them? What do they need to know?
I think they need to be aware of the disparities and the discrimination, you know, that these elders are facing.
Yep. And what programs are already out there to protect their rights. And then again, how we can make those programs stronger. And I think everyone should be made aware of the abuses that take place in nursing home and long-term care facilities. And also what they should be looking out for signs of that abuse.
Exactly.
And then I think finally, we need to make sure that they know where to turn to for help, where to find their safe places. Well, that's a lot, Morgan. Do you want to kind of sum it up for us?
Yeah, Lee, you know, just to kind of conclude the podcast, you know, I hope that, you know, you and I, you know, have persuaded others to kind of help advocate with us for such a vulnerable population. There's so much that still needs to be done, but at least there's progression. You know, we've seen that in the video. She's, you know, Lewis stated, you know, we are somebody, but we are invisible. So I think just bringing light to this visible group would be remarkable. Mm-hmm. And do you want to lead us into some next steps?
Yeah, we talked about a tremendous amount, but I think changes in legislation, education of providers in the community in general, finding funding for programs and research, and advocacy and cultural competency are all areas that we can improve upon and help this population.
Well, thanks, Lee.
Thanks, Morgan. Awesome. This is great to get to talk to you.
Yes, you too.